It's your boy Steiner here with my co-host Ducky as always. Ducky, what do you want to say to the people?
What's going on, everybody?
Thank you, Ducky. With us today, he needs no further introduction, the estimable Ryan Kerrigan. Thank you so much for being with us today, sir. I have some of your art behind me. I have a lot more of it in other places. Thank you so much for being a part of the program.
My pleasure.
So we have a traditional question. We have a traditional question that we ask. Ducky, you wanna ask our traditional question that we're actually gonna ask first due to our tradition?
Yeah. If you had no idea kind of like what we were talking about, what our thing was, what would you think someone was saying when they called someone secondhand talent?
Secondhand talent. Well, I'm actually glad you asked that, because I was thinking about that once I saw the name and stuff. My impression would be, makes me think of kind of like the mentor apprentice sort of relationship where, knowledge or skills are passed along, sort of thing, like secondhand skills, passed on from somebody to other. Close to what you guys were thinking?
I mean, it is. Check out episode 4 with the interview with Mike Layton and to see what that's all about. He is an apprenticing luthier. And I think that is exactly a great interpretation of it.
Yeah.
Passing it. Everybody nice. Who makes the experience what it is with, without them, it would not go on.
Okay. The bricks that make up the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good motivation. I see your...
way to put it.
You're all the fish tickets on you behind the wall.
Oh yeah, my trophy wall.
Yeah. So have you
are those Millwork tickets on your
right? Let's see. Right here is, this would be like 2000. Here's 14. They're all by year.
So I have those.
14, yeah. 15, 16, 17. Actually, yeah, like everything from 18 on doesn't fit on the wall. starts with 91 over there and goes all the way around the corner.
Here, damn.
I thought I had a lot of stuff behind me. Can you do that one more time?
Yeah, so this is just the corner of my studio here, so it's all just, those are all just ticket stubs.
Oh, fish nerds.
Yeah. Oh yeah, geek.
There's gonna be people pausing and zooming in.
are you on Instagram at all?
I am. Yep. Art of Ryan Kerrigan on there.
So have you seen, okay, we'll link it, everyone, but have you seen Trey does this like thing where he goes up to some person who's like on his crew, his
love it.
Huge
love it.
Crew. That's, yeah. What are you doing? Fantastic. That's sort of like that really, once we started this, I told Steiner once, I was like, I think it's in the first episode. I was talking about Trey's What Are You Doing series and like
when we were talking about the idea, you told me about Trey's series and my response was great. There's only two people in the game and the other one is Trey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
But yeah, I mean, it's really just kind of like that, like trying to spread information about them, what they do, and make it a little more like accessible. So you kind of like can, it's it, concerts. I mean, for me, being a secondhand talent, it's really cool. It's a cooler experience to know all the ins and outs of the little things that make a show great. So, I mean, it's to make it accessible, and B, kind of to put the spotlight on them for a little bit.
Shine the spotlight on the people who shine the spotlights. I mean, that's kind of one of the phrases we first came up with. And, you know, this is a lot about as well, you know, letting people know that these things that may seem out of reach, right? Like being a concert poster artist or being somebody running lights for a huge band or being that person who's, you know, doing those things, that could be you. Everybody that we've had on the show and everybody we will have on the show, everybody, Ducky and I both, we come from humble beginnings. We come from not knowing, or everybody comes from never knowing how to do what they're doing. But you can.
So what was your first step in learning then?
First step in learning how to do the poster thing?
Yeah.
Well, gosh, you know, I just kind of started doing it, you know. I always knew I was going to be doing something in art, you know, like growing up if the baseball career didn't work out. And so, yeah, I always did. Actually, my first music related art was in second grade, where my teacher, Miss Barrows, she had us do a record album or album cover, you know, back when there were still, you know, albums being put out. Not like your case behind you there, man. Yeah. And so we had to pick a song of the day and then just illustrate the album. And I remember I did Survivor's Eye of the Tiger. And nice. I did the album cover, and man, I wish I still had it.
There something like that where you were like, "Hey, somebody, give me some sort of like step up."
You know, almost every step I've taken like that has kind of been not accidental, but let's say serendipitous.
Yeah.
Like the first posters I ever did were I was at Penn State at the time and living on my dorm, the RA on my dorm floor was in a blues band called Bob Heidi Cat and the Groovy Boots. And he saw that I was doing art. He approached me and he's like, "Hey, you know, we could use some stuff. We could use a poster and a t-shirt and stuff." I was like, "Okay, cool." You know? And so I did that stuff for them. And in exchange, they got me into their Friday night gig at the local bar. And, you know, I was 18 at the time and, you know, they sat me in the corner, got me a pitcher of beer. And I was stoked, you know? And so we did that every Friday for quite a long time. And then the next year, I got involved with these other guys who started another band and just started doing posters for them. And that's kind of how it all kickstarted. And then
how many posters you do? You said you did it every Friday for a while. How many would you say?
For Bob Heidcat, it was just their one poster that they would use, you know, like a stock poster. They would put in the date. Actually, just something that said, you know, every Friday at Zeno's.
Gotcha.
T-shirts, and it was, you know, t-shirts for them and stuff like that. So just a few
free entry first, man. Most of the shows, right? I still shoot a lot of shows that are like free entry.
Oh, for sure. You know, and that was one. You know, as an 18-year-old, I wasn't getting in without going in with the band. You know?
Real talk, though, the reason I started doing stand-up comedy was to get into shows for free. Venues needed someone who would be willing to be on stage and get berated while they broke down the equipment for the next band. And I was like, "Yo, toss all that abuse my way. I got this." Is that if you're shooting your shot and you're really trying to put yourself out there and establish yourself as someone to be reckoned with in the industry, you know, we talked about, you know, Ducky in a recent interview, we talked about how, you know, it's easy to hate on people's work when you're behind a keyboard. And,
yeah.
Right? I was just saying, as a comedian, though, when the people are right there in front of you and hurling insults at you and booing at you and telling you that you suck and occasionally throwing shit at you, that abuse, that's what makes you into a better comedian.
What was that first sort of level up, that first sort of pivotal moment where it was like, this is like a real call that I'm getting right now?
Well, going back to kind of lead off the what I said with the Survivor album, when I was in, I think it was probably early junior high, my mom got me one of those calendars where it had one of the old Fillmore posters on each month.
Yeah.
And so I had, you know, 12 of the Fillmore posters in here. You know, I'd never, that was my first introduction to that entire scene. And I was like, wow, this is
kind
of exactly what's in my head that I want to do. You know,
Fillmore posters. Really,
and it was all the classics, you know, like Mouse and Kelly and Tootin, you know, all my heroes who I eventually went on to meet. And Mouse and Kelly and Conklin and Tootin and Griffin it's probably mostly those five. But so then at that point I realized, well, okay, posters are a thing. So that's kind of what I want to do. And then I did the Groovy Boots stuff and then ended up traveling around a lot after school, Dead Tour and Fish Tour, and then ended up in Ithaca, New York back in the later 90s. And this guy came in, I was actually running this poster store there at the time. This guy came in, he had a weekly radio program called Sharing in the Groove. And it was, you know, playing all the, you know, the second wave jam band stuff that was up and coming in the later 90s. And, you know, it was college town. So they were, program got kind of popular and the local venue, The Haunt, had asked them if they would start bringing in some of these bands because none of these bands were coming to town yet. And so this guy, Stu Pinansky, who was running the radio program, immediately came to me and said, "Hey, we're going to start up this once a week program at The Haunt. We want to do this right. Let's do posters for it." I was like, "Okay, I can do that." And over the next 12 months, we did 36 posters for bands like Sector 9, Slip, Deep Banana Blackout, Wise Monkey Orchestra.
No, oh, I very, love the Slip.
Yeah,
sorry, was, I just had like.
No, no worries. It was yeah, they were great then, and then some of the very very first soul live shows. Yeah, so got to meet all these bands from all over the place at the Haunt that we were bringing into the Haunt, and it went well. It was supposed to be once a week, but then it started getting more and more and more, and that's how we ended up with 36 posters over such a short time. And then when I left Ithaca, I moved to New York, moved to California, followed the last two pre-first hiatus Phish tours east to west.
Wow.
Landed at Shoreline in October of 2000, so never left.
2003, 2004, just for context.
No, before that. 2000, yeah,
right?
You're just saying 2000.
Oh,
pre first hiatus. Yeah. So
ended up. Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, so like 99, 2000.
Ended at those Shoreline shows in October 2000, right? And then right. So I was there and, wow. And just never left and then stayed in California for the next 15 years before moving up to Oregon.
Nice.
But I had met all those bands doing all those posters for the Haunt. And Jam Bass, who were already friends of mine through tour, Andy Gaidell and all those guys.
Shout out Jam Bass.
They were starting. They were just getting to the point where they were going to start throwing shows out there in San Fran. So they asked me if I wanted to do posters for them, and so then we started doing some stuff for Umphreys and more Slip and so many other great bands that they were bringing in, and so all these bands that I had met in Ithaca, they knew of me from my name being on their posters, and then so this kind of just started the whole domino thing from there. And then those bands, when they got bigger and needed stuff, they reached out to me, and that's kind of the Haunt became one of the bigger stepping stones to
so that was kind of like the genesis point
of actually like full-on doing posters. Yeah,
gotcha.
Nice.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
But then once I got out to San Francisco, I fell in with the Rock Poster Society. Found a flyer on a pole one day saying, "Hey, we're doing this show." And I was like, "Well, what is that all about?" And went and checked it out. And sure enough, I got to, they were just starting throwing their shows, so they weren't really well attended. But all those guys were there. You know, all the dudes that were the reason why I was doing what I was doing were sitting behind tables right there. So I just walked all up five? And talked. Well, Rick was already gone at that point, but. So I got to, hang out with Randy Tootin for an hour, talk about making posters and stuff, hang out with Conklin, with Mouse. I met all those guys at this first show I went to. This is probably November of 2000. And that really put it even more in motion. That's when I realized that what I had been doing in Ithaca, I could be doing right now. And this is where I wanted to be doing. One of the reasons why I ended up in the Bay Area is because that's where what I was doing had started, and I wanted to get to where that was, so that was another step. This,
on that note of TRPS though, it's really interesting that that's what you bring up, because I love TRPS. Haven't had the opportunity to make it there yet, but that experience that you just described is one of those things that I have always wanted to like walk up and meet Justin Hampton, meet Jermaine Rogers, meet Mark Spusta, the people who meet Ryan Kerrigan, meet Luke
Chu. I was going to say, how are you not going to say his fucking
name? I've got his art right behind me. this man's right here. I've got more of his work than most artists I collect. And like,
so then I guess knowing your first pivotal moment, do you remember what your first paid gig was? Because we also talked about how it was kind of a first just about getting in for free. Do you remember your first one that was like, whoa, like people are gonna pay me to do this, like,
I mean the Ithaca stuff was paid in the sense that I was paid minimally for actually getting them done and printing the posters.
Can I rephrase it slightly?
Sure. Yes.
All right. What was the first gig that you got, first paid gig that you got, where your thought was, is this happening? Is this real? Like
the most shocking call.
Your first fanboy call, let's say it, where like you got the call from the band, not you reached out, you got the call and you were like, I need somebody else to like read this and verify that I haven't gone insane.
Yeah. I don't know. The not so much a fanboy moment, but the first one that was kind of a kind of out of the blue that kind of shocked me a little bit was actually not even a call, but it was in person. I was vending my artwork. I vend my artwork at the High Sierra Music Festival every year. Cool. And this will be like year 23 for me this year, I think. But back in 2005, I was there, and part of my shtick is that I go and I'll set up the booth. I try not to even look at the names that are on the bill, and then I'll get my booth totally set up, put my chair out, grab some breakfast, and then I'll open up the pamphlet to see who's actually going to be there. And this one act caught my eye. It was Meltown. I was like, okay, that's interesting. I had no idea who they were. Turns out they're a band from Japan who was there for their first time playing in the States. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, I'll have to check them out. And I didn't think about it again. Later that day, these two Japanese guys come into my booth, freak out, and run away. I turned to the other people in the booth, and I was like, well, that was pretty peculiar. And about 20 minutes later, they come running back with a third guy who happened, and it turns out they were in the band. They were three of the dudes in Meltown. They had gone to get the bass player, Tapia, because he had done some schooling in Virginia, so I had a much better grasp of English. And through him, they explained that they knew my artwork through Fish Flot.
Wow.
And they were thrilled about it and so excited to see my art there. And then I'll never forget the quote from them. They're like, we want to make you famous. I was like, okay, great.
That's awesome.
Let me hear you first. You know, see if you guys are any good. And turns out they were great. I did go get a chance to hear the band, and I fell in love with it. I thought it was fantastic. And they came back and they kind of hung out all weekend and stuff. Super duper nice guys. And they were having their first CD was coming out like 3 or 4 months later. And they had me do the poster for their CD release party, which was in Tokyo. And so I thought that was pretty cool. I never thought I'd do a poster for one, a show in Tokyo or a band from Tokyo, you know, that I just met, you know.
I can confirm that that's cool. I will secondhand tell it's certified cool.